Howdy. Let's thank Corey Morrow once again, ladies and gentlemen, for being here. Hats off to Corey. So glad he could be here with us today on this Go Texan Rodeo Sunday. Yeah. I got in a fight this weekend in preparation for the rodeo. If you can see my eye there, there's blood already. Can you see that? There's blood still in it. I thought I'd try to be tough and go to a honky-tonk and get... Actually, it's just a sty. But anyway. All right. Well, speaking of fighting, there you go. They're going to keep my hat. I may need it later. Speaking of fighting, when I was a little kid, my brother and I would get up every Saturday morning around 9 o'clock, plop ourselves in front of the TV set with rabbit ears. Kids, ask your parents. And we would get white powdered donuts and vitamin D whole non-organic milk. And we'd eat the donuts, drink the milk, turn on the TV, and watch professional wrestling. Oh, yeah. We love professional wrestling. It was phenomenal. Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, Chief Wahoo McDaniels. You had the Von Erichs here in Texas. I mean, that was the glory days. That was the real deal. We loved it. We loved to watch pro wrestling. And sometimes we'd be watching. There were only like, what, 3.5 stations back in the day. We'd be watching TV, watching, Jimmy Superfly Snuka about to come off the top ropes for an atomic elbow. And this would suddenly appear on the TV screen. I kid you not. Watch.
This is a test. This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcasting system. This is only a test.
Do you remember that? How many of you remember that? Yeah. And I played that noise just a little bit longer to annoy you. Because that's what it felt like when pro wrestling or our cartoons were interrupted on a Saturday morning or during the week. The emergency broadcasting system. If this was a real emergency, then it would be followed by news and we would tell you what you need to do next. But tests are annoying, aren't they? I don't like tests. I don't care if it's a pop quiz, a final exam. I don't like tests. I've been a professor and a student. I don't like giving them or receiving them. I don't like to take tests. But you know what? Tests are a part of life. In our culture, we'd rather talk about our dreams. What are your dreams? What's in your heart? Follow your heart. Follow your dreams. And that's all great. By the way, I think you should get a job first. Follow your dreams. But I've noticed this in life. When you receive a real dream or a real vision, let's say you receive some type of dream from God, that dream is always followed by a test. I don't know if God's given you a dream about your family, about your business, about something in the future, but that dream is going to be followed by a test. We talked the last several weeks about knowing and growing and going with God. God wants us to know Him. He wants us to grow with Him in community. He also wants us to go with Him. And the way we go with Him, one of the ways, is understanding when life is giving you a test, or God is giving you a test. God is giving you a challenge. What do you do about that? How do you negotiate that? Many years ago, there was a couple that was struggling with infertility. They wanted to have a child. They wanted to have a baby. They prayed and they cried and they tried and nothing would happen. Finally, they got tired of that. They said, we're going to find a different way. We're going to get this mom. And the wife agreed to the husband, say, hey, you go ahead and have relations with this other lady, and she can give us this child that we have. So that happened, and they had a son, but not through the real mom. And as time passed, something else happened. God entered the scene. Of course, the old story I'm talking about is the story of Abraham and Sarah. God promised Abraham. God gave Abraham a dream that he was going to make him the father of a nation, that his descendants would outnumber the stars in the heaven and the sand and all the beaches in the world. That was the promise and the dream that God placed in Abraham's heart when he told him to go, get out of Dodge, leave what you're comfortable with. I'm going to show you a land. So he went. He did this. And then he's expecting to have a son, and him and Sarah never had a son. Then they got up in age. They got up in their 90s. They were close to 100 years old, and God says, you're still going to have a son. And they say, we already had one through Hagar, this kind of surrogate mom situation. God goes, no, you're going to have one through Sarah. Well, Sarah is barren, and even if she were not barren, it's past that time. God said, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do that. So God somehow, some way, gave them a son, and the son was named Isaac. And the name Isaac doesn't mean laughter. The name Isaac means it's the sound of laughter. It literally means ha, ha, ha. It means the sound of laughter. That's Isaac. Because that's the way Sarah, that's the way they received him. They just couldn't believe it. So now Abraham is in this journey with God, and God has given him many tests along the way. Some of those tests he failed. Some of those tests he passed and succeeded. And now things are happening. It looks like God is going to fulfill his promise, his dream for the future, and it's going to happen through his son Isaac. It's through Isaac that God's going to create this great nation, and these descendants and this great land is going to be established. So that's the backstory. A man, Abraham, has a dream, and God tests that dream. Look at Genesis, the very first book in the Bible, Genesis chapter number 22, verses 1 through 3. Because in this chapter, in these verses, something happens that's bizarre. Something happens that's inexplicable. Something happens that is beyond and transcends reason. Genesis 22, 1 through 3. After these things, God tested Abraham. And he said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will tell you. So Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his donkey and went to the place that God had told him. This is one of the most, if not the most, disturbing stories in the entire Bible. It doesn't make sense. It's disturbing on many levels. Agnostic scholar Bart Ehrman recoils at the idea that God could use suffering as a test of Abraham's faithfulness to God. Atheist Richard Dawkins ups the ante and says this story is about child abuse and bullying from God. And I would say this. I think they're wrong. I understand Ehrman. I understand Dawkins. I understand their recoiling, their anger about this particular story and this particular text, but I think they're missing it. First of all, we know early on in Genesis chapter 22, verse 1, that this is only a test. God never, ever would have allowed Abraham to sacrifice his son. God doesn't command us to do that. When you look at rabbinic scholars, the Jewish scholars, the entire Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, are a running polemic against worldviews that practice child sacrifice. So the idea that God was, you know, calling him to do this, that he was actually going to do it, that is not the case. And God doesn't do that. This is it's still an intriguing story, a bizarre story. But God would never lead someone to do that back then or even today. That's just absolutely absurd and crazy. Now, out of all the theologians and scholars and philosophers who have looked at this story, no one, in my opinion, has looked at it more deeply than the philosopher I love, Soren Kierkegaard. Kierkegaard wrote an entire book, maybe his most popular book, called Fear and Trembling. And he wrote it, and he told the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac from many different angles. And Kierkegaard was a tricky kind of guy. I mean, he was a very creative guy. If he were a filmmaker today, he would be like a David Fincher or a Tarantino or someone like that, you know. He was just so creative. And so he wrote this book, Fear and Trembling, under a pseudonym called Johannes de Silencio. And Johannes de Silencio is the author of Fear and Trembling, and he is writing as someone who does not believe in God, who does not have faith, and is reading the story of Genesis 22, verses 1 following, Abraham sacrificing Isaac. Now, the day that Fear and Trembling was published, Kierkegaard published another book called Repetition, which was a novel and a story. And there was a reason, and these two books connect in some way, and I'll show you that in just a little bit. But now let's go back to the story and try to figure out what was happening. Why was God testing Abraham? Why does God test us? Why does he do that? First of all, I think a test prepares us for the battles of life. In life, you and I are going to go through many, many battles. We're going to go through times that are dark, times that are challenging, times that are literally gut-wrenching. And God, many times, as we grow in a relationship with him, as we know God, as we start to go with God, he gives us these tests to prepare us for the battles, these future battles that we're going to face. I think about one of the guys that I like to follow and learn from is a former Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink. And Jocko Willink served over 20 years in our military, many tours of duty. He's a great writer, a great leader. And one of the things that he talks about and other SEALs talk about is something they have in Navy SEALs training called Hell Week. And Hell Week is the third week really into the SEALs training, and it's only 5.5 days. And what they go through is unbelievable. Virtually have no sleep. They eat very little. They're thrown into the Pacific Ocean. It's 55 degrees. They're doing like over 200, running 200 miles in combat boots in these days, running with boats on their head, being dropped out of helicopters, no sleep, doing thousands of push-ups, pull-ups. I mean, it is a grueling physical, mental, psychological challenge to simply make it through those 5.5 days called Hell Week. Why do they do that? Why did the people who created the SEALs, why did they create this thing called Hell Week, these 5.5 days? Why do they do that? Because, well, the answer is obvious. These SEALs, these elite soldiers, will go into battle. They're going to go places where even soldiers don't go. And they're going to go into battle. They're going to be in extreme danger, in extreme conditions. And these people have to be battle ready. So Hell Week and all the training and the vetting that they do for the Navy SEALs is used to prepare them to be the soldier, the fighter that they're going to have to be when the bombs are going off and when their buddies are getting shot and wounded and killed. They're going to have to be ready. Tests prepares us for the battles of life. We all go through our various kinds of hell weeks. And many times, like, why? Why do I have to go through this hell week? Hell month? Hell year? Years? Season? Why is that? Perhaps in your own hell week, God can use that to mold you and to make you into the person that he wants you to be and to become. test prepares us for battle. A big battle that a lot of us face is dealing with brokenness, especially in the area of divorce. And sometimes the repercussions of that don't start happening until you're in your 20s and 30s. And how do you deal with that? Hold on to that. We're going to talk about that and look at that next week. Next week. Don't miss next week. But for now, a test prepares us for battle. A test also does this. A test reveals the grasp of our hearts. A test reveals the grasp of our hearts. Think about this. Have you ever been around a little baby lately? I was around my niece's son this week, and this baby is just Pudge-o-matic. I love pudgy cheeks. That's the best thing in the world. I wish I had them right now. Pudgy cheeks are phenomenal. But this little infant, I don't know, a few months old, when you go out to kind of shake hands with the baby, a baby will what? Even as an infant, grab hold to a finger and hold on for life. You ever, do I have a witness? Am I alone, right? You ever seen that? Babies have tight grips. There you go. And then they get, a little bit older, and you're teaching the baby how to walk, and they'll just take their little chubby little hand and hold on to your paw, and they're just grasping to your hand. And as they get a little bit older, you give them a bicycle. After they learn the tricycle, you give them a bicycle, you take the training wheels off, and they learn how to balance. They fall down, they skin the knee, and then they're grasping the handles of that bicycle, riding on the road of life. Then maybe in junior high or high school, they find, that special someone that they're in love with, and they take the risk and grasp their hand. And maybe they graduate high school or college, and they get that diploma, and they grasp that diploma. They go find a job, and you grasp the bottom rung of that ladder, and you start climbing up the ladder. And then you start to age a little bit, and having trouble walking, and you grasp a hold of a walker with the tennis balls on the back, You're walking through life, grasping. And then you find yourself in a hospital surrounded by people who don't know the contraptions and noises and beep, beep, beep. And then you grasp hold of the rail of your bed, and that's it. Have a nice day. So, seriously though, we go through life grasping. Grasping things, grasping people, grasping ideas, and holding on with a tight grip. And a part of life, we have to do that, right? Hold on, hang in there. So we have to. But there's also a part of our life when we have a test in our life, a major test like Abraham had. And God reveals to us what we're grasping on to, what we may be withholding from Him. In this passage, He's not talking about sin. It's not the test about sin and repentance. This is the test about holding on or holding on to someone that's actually a good thing. Perhaps a gift from God to you. It could be your family. It could be a child. It could be a dream. And you're holding on to it. Kierkegaard, anguished over this story. Kierkegaard's understanding of this story, interpretation of the story, led to a massively influential movement in the world called existentialism. They're both theistic and atheistic versions of it, but Kierkegaard is the father of existentialism. He wrote that one book, that novella, called Repetition, published the same day as Fear and Trembling on Genesis 22. And the novella was about a young man who was engaged to someone, but he broke off that engagement. Kierkegaard, by the time he was 25, had lost both of his parents. He had lost 5 of his 6 siblings. He knew what pain and suffering was like. He knew what loss was like. But somewhere in the process of pain and loss, he saw someone, a girl by the name of Regine Olsen, that caught his eye. This beautiful Danish girl captured Soren's heart, and he tried to court her, and he talked to the family, and after a long process, he finally agreed, and Regine's dad agreed that Soren could ask for her hand in marriage, and so he proposed to Regine, and they were engaged for over a year, but somewhere in that process, Soren got cold feet. He began to doubt whether or not he could be a husband. He began to doubt his love, and he began to wonder, could he fulfill God's call in his life if he married Regine? So he had to do something that was completely culturally unacceptable and taboo. He had to break off the engagement. He had to take this love of his life, this joy that he believed that was a gift from God, and to lay her on the altar. So he writes in these indirect ways, through repetition and directly through fear and trembling, and talking about Abraham offering Isaac as he laid down Regine, as he laid down that relationship on the altar and broke the engagement off. Test reveals the grasp of our hearts. So maybe as you're listening to the story, as you're listening to this message, you're wondering, what am I holding on to? What am I grasping onto in my heart? And what do I do? Abraham, if you know the rest of the story, took his son Isaac and some of the people who worked for Abraham. They saddled up and got on the donkey. They went to this place called Moriah. He went up to the mountain. He walked up with Isaac, with the wood, with the knife. Isaac said, Dad, where's the sacrifice? Where's the sacrifice? Where's the animal sacrifice? And Abraham said, don't worry, God will provide. He will provide. And Abraham places his son, his only son, on the altar and raises the knife. And then, in verse 12, a voice from heaven, do not lay your hands on the boy or do anything to him, because now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your only son from me. Abraham, he lifted his eyes and looked, and behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by the horns. He went and took the ram, offered the ram as a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord, it will be provided. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham out of heaven a second time and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will bless you. I will indeed multiply your descendants as the stars of the heavens and as the sands that is on the seashore. Abraham passed the test. A test that prepares him, that prepares us for the battles of life. A test that reveals the grasp of our hearts, and also a test that plunges us into the very heart of God. A test, a challenge, plunges us into the very heart of God. Abraham had a choice to make. Would he hold on or would he let go? Would he grasp tightly to his dream, into his future, into his hope, and to the promised child that God had given him? Or would he lay that on the altar before him and plunge himself into the very heart of God? Because at that moment, God was there. God provided for him. And we know and we can see how this story that happened thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago somehow foreshadowed what God would do. Because what God asked Abraham to do, God did. God did. Romans 8, he who did not spare his own son, his only son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? All things. God sent his son. His son laid down his life for us, that we could be forgiven, that we could have redemption, as Corey was talking about, that we could be restored. So we cling to the old, rugged cross that shows us the incredible, mysterious justice and love and mercy and provision of God when we need him the most. Amazing. When I'm in a test, when you're in a test, when you're in a challenge, when God has revealed to you what you're grasping and holding on to and withholding and need to let go and lay on the altar, when you do that, know that the God who's asking you to do that is the God who gave himself for you and gave himself for me on that cross. I may not understand, but I can trust him because I know his love for me. I know that in that moment, he will be there and he will provide. This has been a test of the emergency broadcasting system. In case of a real emergency, hand it over to him. Lay it down on the altar, and he will provide. You pray with me. God, you speak to us in so many, many, many ways. Through music, through laughter, through stories of testimonies, and God, through testing. And God, there's a lot about this life and a lot about this world and a lot about things that are going on that we do not understand. But we do understand this, that you're there. You're there, and you're not just way up there from a distance, God, but you were close to us. And God, you came down, and you suffered, and you died, and you rose again through your Son, Jesus Christ, that we might know you, that we might grow stronger in you by your mercy, by your grace, as we go through the many trials and testings of this life. We know that you love us. So we let go of our Isaacs. We let go of our dreams. We give them to you, God, because they're already yours. and we know you'll provide. God, I thank you that when we gather here, you give us a chance to connect to community, to try to do life together. So, Father, I pray that during this time of invitation, that there'll be people who will stand and come and walk down front and say, hey, man, I want to do life here. I want to build community here. I want to make a difference here. God, may they stand and come down front today. It's our prayer in Jesus' name.